on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition. Is it Wednesday?
It's Thursday.
Thursday edition of InvestTalk. I've lost a day. Mm-hmm. It's July 16th, 2015. And much of our hour together each day is spent talking about investing, as you know, principles, strategies, individual stocks. But it's the basics of our personal finances that we have to be, you know, we have to nail that down. The basics of our personal finances. And that doesn't mean investing in strategies. It doesn't mean what do you do with your income? What's the standard of living that you're at? And are you spending less than you earn? Those kinds of questions. So whatever you want to call it, financial planning, personal finance, whatever you want to call it, it's really about applying common sense. I mean, doing what you should do. And a lot of people know what they should do and they still don't do it. They still spend more than they know they should because it's fun, especially the younger people. So on this show, I'm trying to encourage some common sense approach to your money and hopefully answer questions that you have about investing, about stocks, but also about your personal finances. Do you have, do you need life insurance? Now, there's a question. Most people assume that they need it. Well, you don't necessarily need it. Depends on what you want it for. What's the purpose of it? You know, it's all, and everything in life takes effort. So you have to take the effort to look at your financial situation and what you're doing. So in order to do well, you want to be a well-rounded person. You got to understand economics. You got to kind of pay attention. You can't just go through life oblivious to what's going on around you. I mean, later on in the show, Justin and I are going to talk about education and how much it costs and what kind of education you get and what education's worth more than other kinds of education. So, you know, you have to think about this stuff. So, and also got to put the stock market in historical context. What does it generally do? What happens? What are the secular bear and bull market phases and what does that mean? Where are we now? Or where are we in the interest rate cycle? You know, long term, not just talk about today and the Fed's going to raise rates. We can talk all about that, but on a long term basis, where are we? And all this background information will help you make better decisions. It really will. I guess I had started off on a kind of a broad subject here, but that's
broad is good. Broad is important. It's important to think broadly because if you don't think about the big picture, a lot of people get caught up in the minutia of those little things. And little things are important, but having the big perspective is probably the most important thing.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and get started answering some questions because that's what everybody likes us to do. Sometimes marriage counseling and financial planning cross paths, or you want to call our number. We'll ask about that. I can't do marriage counseling, but I certainly can talk about the financial stuff. Our number is 888-99-CHART. We'll take this question right now on our 24-hour listen line.
Hey, Steve. Just wanted to tell you I'm a big fan of your show. I like listening to you. I did have a question just in regards to interest rates. All I hear about the past few years is about, you know, rates moving up from zero, that they'll raise the rates, and we talk about it, hear it on the news all the time. But do you think that there's a possibility that they'll just keep it the way it is? That's my question. So have a nice day. Take care.
No. They will never keep it the way it is for that very much longer. They won't. They're going to try to normalize it. And Janet Yellen has been very clear that she wants to start normalizing it this year. But normalizing it means it goes up to 2-3%.
Yeah, that's
we're at zero.
Well, and how long is it going to take to get there?
Yeah, it's going to take
years. And that's another big question. Is
how about a couple of years?
Yes, they'll likely start this year, but it's going to be such a minuscule amount. Yeah. Now it does change the psychology on Wall Street and how investors are thinking, etc. But the magnitude of the rate change will be extremely important, and the pace of the rate change will be extremely important. And I think it's going to be a very slow pace. Mohamed El Arian, the former CIO of PIMCO, he even said this is the shallowest rate tightening cycle ever, because you know the not only are investors still scarred from the financial crisis, but regulators in the Federal Reserve are also still scarred from the financial crisis.
But the answer is no. They're not going to leave it the way it is. They are going to raise it. It's just going to be very small and very slow.
Mm-hmm. So,
but they're not going to leave it alone.
Yeah. Is it going to be impactful for most people?
And I would say probably not initially. I don't see. Not only do I think that they're going to raise the rate, I think they're going to do a rate increase and then wait months before they even think about doing another one.
Yeah, they have a meeting about every 6 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So I they certainly aren't going to do it in back-to-back meetings.
Probably not. The only way they would do that is all of a sudden our economy just gets really hot and inflation picks up really big.
Yeah.
Well, I don't see that in the picture either.
Yeah, they're definitely going to wait at least 3 months between meetings.
I would think. That would be my guess, too. Making the transition into investing in your 60s beyond requires a kind of a new way of thinking about investments. 11 investing tips for those guys, us guys and gals, are over 60. That'd be me, by the way. Not Justin, but me. That's going to be one of our talking points. We're also going to talk about the summertime snooze in our markets. What's going on? Why is it snoozing? Is it going to continue to snooze? We'll discuss that. And I got a couple of interesting ones. Justin wants to talk about what's your topic that you wanted to bring up?
My topic is about, it's related to student loans, but it's also about degrees and how degrees cost the same, right? If you get a degree in communications, it's the same as a degree in engineering. And I think that's out of whack, and the numbers show that. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
Also, the most friendly income tax friendly states in the United States, which are they? Or how about overall tax burdens? Which states are number one, two, and three? And credit card fees that you shouldn't be paying that they try to sneak in on you. Pay attention. And there's like, I'm going to give you five of them. Five of them that most credit card companies don't charge, but there are certain ones who do. So, you know, depending on your bank and so on and so forth. So these are things I want you to watch for on your statement, or whenever you do something that's a little unusual and they're going to charge you for it. They shouldn't charge you for these things. Those are things we're going to talk about today. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? The market was up. We've had, a five? Yesterday it was down 1-2 points. It's kind of flat yesterday. But not counting yesterday, we've been up a week, 5 days in a row with one day in there being flat.
Yep.
So 6 days, 1 day flat. So all got started because of the Greek agreement. Why would that cause our markets to go up? Because, you know, if Justin and I stood back and looked at this and said, well, what kind of impact would Greece have on the U.S.? We would say absolutely none. But psychologically, it does.
Yeah, as economy, it's weak. It's a very small influence on our economy, right? Because they're so small.
Not even noticeable.
The biggest question was there going to be any contagion? And, you know,
throughout Europe.
That's a possibility, but, you know, they've taken a lot of steps to stop that as well. But it's really about, to me, it's about China. China's the biggest worry out there. They've had a big drop in their market, and it's a much bigger economy. It's the second largest economy in the world. So, you know, the big question is, are they going to continue to slow? Is the GDP there going to continue to slow?
And their GDP came out and they said they grew at 7%. We mentioned this yesterday. Mm-hmm. Maybe it did. Maybe it didn't.
Probably.
But it calmed the market. Okay? Think of it in those terms. Remember, there's this emotional aspect of the market as well as the fundamental aspect. And sometimes emotional aspect trumps fundamental aspect. So,
we talk sometimes about the volatility index, you know, how worried people are. The last 5 days is the biggest drop in the VIX in 5 days since 1990 when they started the VIX.
And remember, that's what we call the fear gauge, meaning the fear dropped right off
the cliff.
No one's fearing now. Well, you know, I always find it suspect when something moves too fast in either direction. Always say, wait a minute. That's not.
What, you mean like the Chinese market going up 100%, 150%?
Yeah. I get nervous about those kinds of things. We're ready to talk to you. We want to talk about money. We always try to play catch up in retirement planning. Almost everybody out there I know is trying to play catch up in retirement planning. So what's the best strategy? You want to talk about that? 888-99-CHARTS, how you can get through to InvestTalk.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Chet in Chicago. Had a question about Union Pacific. I know it is a little more diversified than a lot of the other railroad companies, not as coal heavy, trading at what looks to be a discount right now. I know the sector's weak in general. Was wondering what would be a good buy point to get in. Thanks so much, guys. Love the show. Look forward to hearing from you. Bye-bye.
UNP as in Paul is the symbol. Union Pacific Corporation provides rail transportation for 32,000 miles of main and branch line tracks across 23 states. It is a $84 billion company. It's not a small company. And they are growing their earnings. You know, $5.75 a share last year. This year it's going to be $5.83. That's only a 1% increase, but it's increasing. But next year they're projecting a 14% increase to $6.64. And the stock is trading at 96. So at this point, that seems a little pricey to me.
Mm-hmm. And okay. Earnings are being downgraded for this year and next year. And sales are now flat year over year.
And it might be a problem with, you know, how much coal are they moving in product versus other kinds of products?
Yeah.
And if they're dominant in coal, everybody hates coal politically.
And oil as well. A lot of, especially up there in the Bakken, they move a lot of oil that comes from shale via rail, and now that's one of the reasons why the shale industry or the railroad industry is
suffering.
It's suffering because of that.
So I would kind of avoid it until we see some really good support come into this. He wanted a buy point. And I don't think you're there yet.
I'd say around the 200-week moving average, which would be around 80, low 80s.
Remember, it's at 96 right now.
Yeah.
So I think it's something you might want to look elsewhere until it gets down to those numbers. And it may not get down there, but I wouldn't look at it. Yeah. It's not something I would look at right now. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Do you agree with that? Buy this?
I wouldn't buy it. It's weak technically, and I don't like that. The whole transportation index is just weak.
Yeah. Look at IYT, which is the transportation ETF, and you'll find that the whole sector is not doing very good for months now.
But a good company.
Yeah. It's still a good, solid company. Don't get us wrong. It's just not what we would buy right now. Okay. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Summertime snooze. For our market, why is the stock market just basically trading in a very range? It may break out. You know, it looks like it's trying to break out, thinking about breaking out, but it still hasn't broken out. And why is that so? Well, we've had a lot of things on our mind. Of course, Greece and China kind of top the list in my mind. And we have been writing in the newsletter, in our annual letter, in our core letters, that the problems that we would have this year in our market, it's not necessarily coming from us. It will come from outside. And those are two areas that we pointed at. Europe, Greece, China, Middle East, those are the areas that are going to cause problems for our market. And that's what you're seeing, a summertime of where those problems seem to be, think about China and think about Greece. Yeah, those two areas have really been tough. And even this week, retail sales have come out and they were down. Don't take this the wrong way, because economically, all the economic numbers are improving. They really are. But not by...
Under the surface, though, it's still kind of...
It's kind tepid. Of... Yeah, it's not improving that much. Have you thought about a portfolio checkup? Having a professional look at your portfolio? Be happy to do that. I'll be in San Jose on August 4th. Go to InvestTalk.com and click on Make an Appointment.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. There's a variety of IRA types, with the differences being driven by when and how money is contributed to the retirement account. How to choose between the different types of IRAs. That's one of our talking points for Friday's podcast.
888-99-CHART. Our first priority is always answering your questions. So let's pick up a call that came in before today's program. It's called our 24-hour listener line number. Same number, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, this is Chris from Louisville, Kentucky. Wanted to get your opinion on Netflix and FLX. Wanted to take a short position on this stock. It incredibly went up 20% today. I don't think that this run can continue. So wanted to get your opinion on shorting Netflix and FLX. Thanks a lot, guys. Look forward to hearing on the podcast.
I never like shorting in the face of very strong numbers, and they came out with very strong numbers. Now, will it pull back from this big move up? Probably. But shorting?
Yeah, I would wait about 3 days before I'd short it. I don't think it's a terrible short candidate because it's certainly overvalued. Their subscriber growth is good, but look at their profits. Profits down 63%.
I wouldn't short something that's in this kind of upward trend.
Yeah. What you want to look for is a reversal day. Is you see it start up during the early part of the day and end near the lows of the day, and then you can short it and use the high of that day as your out.
Yeah.
And that would be my strategy. But at this point, you know that didn't happen today. That's for sure.
Yeah, take a look at the chart. If you tried to short this thing any time during the year with the big ups that it's had with the earnings every quarter, you would have lost money. It would be very difficult. Yeah. You could have done it, but you'd have to be very quick.
It's like last time in January. It went up big. Went up from about $50 a share up to about 60 in the first day. And then it rallied for about a month and a half up to close to 70. And then you could have shortened it. Shorted it for maybe a month, and it went back down to 60. But then the next earnings came out, and it went all the way up to about 80.
See, but even if he was perfect, which of course you can't be, that means you would have, if you're going to do the same thing today because it had that big pop, you would have lost money on that deal no matter how perfect of that first quarter. You would have lost money. You wouldn't have been able to be perfect like that. Yeah.
Now, the best thing that I could say about it being a good short candidate is it's way outside of its Bollinger Band, which is
true.
A technical indicator, and usually stocks stay in their Bollinger Band, which is just it's basically a range that if it gets above it, it's too overbought. If it gets below it, it's too oversold, and it's way above it, so it's certainly overbought. But stocks can stay overbought for extended period of time. So
and it's very overpriced. Yeah. Don't get us wrong. Yeah. I mean, but I just hate.
It made 6 cents a share last quarter.
Yeah, that's PE ratio is 239.
The last four quarters, it's made a combined. Let's call it 41 cents a share.
And it's selling for $115 a share.
Yeah.
You can't get much overpriced than that.
And its cash flow levels are falling. Its costs to get these new subscribers are just very, very high. So, yeah, they get new subscribers, but that's, it's not enough. So I like what it's thinking. I just wouldn't do it right now.
11 investing tips for 60-somethings, okay? When you get over 60, there's a point where in your life where you'll say, you know what? My earnings years are mostly behind me. So now I have to think about, I'm going to be using my savings, my retirement accounts, as I get closer and closer to retirement. And one of the things you need to do, and we've talked about many aspects of this many times, but it's still very, very important. First thing is you got to estimate how long your savings are going to last, although 401k. How long is it going to last? How much do you need to take out of it? And try to gauge it to about 90 when you reach the age of 90. That's because you're going to, most people will live that to that age or longer.
Yeah. When we do retirement maps for our clients, that's what we use. We use 90. You can adjust it up, but 90 is a good rule of thumb.
So figure out how much your annual expenses are. Know what they are. What are the costs going to be? And make sure you have emergency savings for emergencies. You have money set aside for emergencies. Who knows how much you should set aside? That's kind of a personal thing, but you do need to set that aside because you will have them.
And also plan your withdrawals. And the withdrawals matter based on, do you have pension? Which Social Security going to be? What consistent income are you going to get in retirement? And then you can figure out, like you said before, you got to figure out your expenses.
Yeah.
And you match those two together and say, I'm going to need X amount per month. And then you can plan that withdrawal and do that calculation to figure out whether you're likely to be successful. And like I said, that's another thing we do for our clients with our retirement map.
And generally, you need to seek some safety for a portion of your portfolio. And I understand you may want to take a lot of risk or maybe you don't want to take a lot of risk. But it just is prudent when you stop having active income coming in from working that you don't take as much risk because you don't have as much time to make up any volatility in your assets because you're going to start using them. So at some point you say, I need to take much less risk with this bunch of money over here.
Yeah, and then at the same time, don't neglect the growth either. You don't want to get too safe in your investment strategy because then you're not going to grow the money that you do have. So it's about finding that proper balance.
Yeah, well, that and that balance is particular to you, yeah. not to what we say, but everybody has these formulas, and I always think, well, wait a minute, what if that person's different? Yeah, so you're going to check that out. Are you leaving Social Security dollars on the table, missing out on thousands in benefits? Well, we'll be talking to an author of the best-selling book, Get What's Yours, Secrets to Maximizing Your Social Security Benefits. That's coming up next right here on Invest Talk, where you can tune in for straight talk about money.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
It's one of the pillars of our retirement planning, everybody. Social Security benefits. But are you getting all the benefits you're entitled to? Getting Social Security wrong can mean thousands of dollars in missed benefits. We've talked about this numerous times on this show. The authors of the book, Get What's Yours, and you know I've read the book and I've talked about various chapters in that book. It's Secrets to Maximizing Your Social Security Benefits. We have Lawrence Kittlecoff, a Boston University economics professor, is one of the authors. Paul Simon is also another author, business and economics correspondent for PBS NewsHour, and Philip Mueller, who writes about retirement for various news outlets, including Money Magazine and PBS. So today we're going to welcome Lawrence Kittlecoff to Invest Talk and appreciate you being with us.
Oh, great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Now, before we get into our questions, I have Justin Klein here, and he has one that he's been dying to ask you. I want to invite our listeners to call with any Social Security questions they might have that Mr. Kittlecoff might be able to answer. 888-99-CHART is our number. You can call us right now. So let's get right to it. It seems like a lot of people don't know much about the various rules of Social Security. There's like 2,728 rules, like file and suspend and start and stop. And my favorite is spousal benefits that I bet you hardly anybody knows about. So what are some of the most common scenarios faced by married retired couples about this? What should they kind of, can you give us a little overview?
Yeah, this is actually how the book got started because Paul Solomon, one of my co-authors, is a tennis partner of mine, and we were playing tennis. And we took a break, and I asked him what he was going to do with Social Security. He and his wife were reaching full retirement age. He said they were both going to wait till 70 and take the retirement benefit at 70 at the maximum value. And if you take it at 70, it's 76% higher than if you take it at 62. It's about 32% higher than if you take it at full retirement age, which is now 66. So I said, well, that's good, but do you know about spousal benefits? He said, well, no, I can't get spousal benefits. I said, Paul, do you know about spousal benefits? He said, don't tell me. I know everything about it. I cannot get spousal benefits. This argument went on for about 5 minutes. Finally, I said, I'm going to make you $50,000 in the next 2 minutes, and you're going to buy me dinner. And that's what happened. I told him about how to get spousal benefits for free, which consists of one of the two spouses, in this case, his wife, who's slightly older. She did something called she filed for her retirement benefit. She asked for it, but then she immediately suspended it and allowed it to grow, and she started taking it then at 70. And for Paul, what he did is he went in and he filed just for his spousal benefit. So he got half of his wife's full retirement benefit, and he got that. It's about $12,000 a year for 4 years. He ended up with close to $50,000 that he knew nothing about. Had he not had played tennis with me, he would have lost $50,000.
Okay, and so the person making the most money should file and suspend in a married couple files a spend, and the person who doesn't, who made the least amount of money, should file for spousal benefits.
Well, if they're the same age, that would be true. But if, for example, Jan made less money, but she was a little bit older. So had Paul filed and suspended rather than Jan, she would have collected a higher benefit for fewer years. And so it worked out to be better that Paul got a lower benefit off of Jan for more years. So it very much depends on the specifics.
Right.
Social Security's experience. Yeah. And you can't try this before full retirement age, because if you do, then, first of all, you cannot suspend your benefit before full retirement age. And if, for example, if had Jan filed for her retirement benefit, maybe she was already collecting her retirement benefit, and had Paul tried to get a spousal benefit, let's say at 63, he would have been forced to take his retirement benefit at that point. It's only when you reach full retirement age that you can take your retirement benefit, your spousal benefit by itself.
I see.
So when you're forced to take two benefits at once, you're screwed, because they only give you the larger of the two. So the whole name of the game here is to time your benefit receipt. Take one benefit first and let the other one grow. But you have to be careful about their gotcha rules.
Well,
they don't force you to take two at once.
That leads me into the question that I wanted to ask very nicely, because, like you said, if, say, for example, one spouse's benefit is $2,000 a month and the other is $1,500 a month, and they're married, well, they just get that $2,000 a month, correct?
Well, they get a little bit more than
that. Or a little bit more, yeah. But wouldn't it make sense to say, sorry, honey, I still love you, but we're getting a divorce, and get a divorce, and then they both get their full benefit, as opposed to, you know, the much smaller benefit by being together?
Would that work?
Here's the thing. One of the two can get a full or free spousal benefit if they play their cards right.
Okay.
But if they're divorced, both divorcees, divorced spouses, both of them can get a full divorcee spousal benefit if they've been married for 10 or more years. So, for example, Paul and his wife, Jan, could have gotten divorced at 64. You need to be divorced for 2 years to start collecting divorcee spousal benefits. But they could have been divorced for 2 years. And then at 66, they could have both have filed for a full spousal benefit, just for a spousal benefit, and then waited till 70 to collect the retirement benefit. So rather than getting $50,000 more, had they gotten divorced and then lived in sin and then maybe remarried at 70, they could have picked up $100,000 more. And that's a lot of money for a lot of middle-class people. So,
yeah. Isn't that a no-brainer? I mean, from a financial point of view, it's kind of a no-brainer. You're just divorced for 6 years, but like you said, you can get buried again at 70.
Yeah, although, you know, divorce has got its cost, and you got to divvy up assets. You've got to deal with lawyers. It's not costless, but
if you're doing it just for this purpose, and you're not really getting divorced, you're still living together, etc. It seems like a no-brainer to me.
I think it's perfectly legal. I'll give you another example of something that that I think is perfectly legal, which is Social Security says that if you have been divorced and you get remarried before age 60, let's say you were married to somebody who's a high earner, and then you got remarried at 58, for example, and now you're married, maybe you're 63, and your ex just dies. He picks up and dies. And you would like to collect a divorcee widow's benefit, but you're not able to do that because you got married before age 60. Age 60 is the critical age.
Right.
So what you could do is get divorced at 63, go down to Social Security, file for your divorcee widow's benefit, the next day get remarried.
So it sounds like there's a lot of divorce and marry games that you can play to pick up tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, we have a whole chapter on this in the book. It's called the Social Security Marriage Game. I mean, this whole system was set up by old white guys in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
And, you know, and with no idea, they decided what was
fair or not fair, and what was going to help, who knows, maybe themselves keep their wives at home watching the kids. If they got, if the wives were rambunctious and left them and divorced them and they didn't live with them for 10 years, they were going to penalize the wives and give them nothing, which is what they did.
Yeah,
so the whole system is based and built and born in sexism. And indeed, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's a Supreme Court justice, one of her most famous cases is forcing Social Security to become sex-free. In other words, not sex biased in terms of its provisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, for everybody else, we do have an author of Get What's Yours with us, Mr. Lawrence Kitlikoff. Please give us a call if you have a question for him. 888-99-CHART is the number, 888-992-4278. I have, when I read this book, there was a lot of things that I really kind of opened my eyes. And, of course, the biggest eye-opener to me was spousal benefits because, to be honest, I didn't even know they existed until I started reading your book. So that was the biggest surprise to me. But what is to stop a married couple who both have both high earners, both pay Social Security all the years they're working, and then they're both hit 70 years old. At 68, 2 years before they hit 70, they filed and suspended. They divorce. And wouldn't each, why can't each one get the maximum amount of their Social Security benefits, even though they're still married, they're still living together? They just divorced to get the maximum amount versus just the highest earners' Social Security benefits.
If they both, let's take the case where they both earn the same amount, okay? So they both have the same age 70 retirement benefit, and they got divorced, whether or not, let's say they did get divorced. Mm-hmm. So they could both file for a spousal benefit. But if they try and take two things at once, their retirement benefit and their spousal benefit, let's say from 70 on, and after age 70, your retirement benefit doesn't get any bigger if you wait to collect it, so you have to kind of take it. It makes no sense not to. So then you're in a situation where you get the larger of the two benefits. Almost always for, you know, decent earners, your retirement benefit's going to exceed your spousal benefit or your divorcee spousal benefit.
Right.
So you actually won't get any spousal benefit. It'll be wiped out by the retirement benefit. So the game to be played here is to take your spousal benefit first between full retirement age, at full retirement age, and then wait till 70 to take your own retirement benefit. That, of course, you know, there's lots of special cases. For example, if you have I can give you an example of a actual household where the husband is about 61, the wife is 45, they have a disabled child. She's earned a lot of money, but she's stopped working to take care of the child. The husband is retiring. Now, should he take his benefit at 62 or wait till 70? Or wait till 66 for retirement age? Well, it turns out we have this, I have a company on the side, and we have a program called Maximize My Social Security at MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com, which we discuss a little bit in the book. And if you run that case through our software, it tells the husband to take his retirement benefit immediately. Now, that seems strange because he's going to get a reduced retirement benefit. But because he does that, he can activate a child benefit for the child and also a child in care spouse benefit for the wife. The two together can collect anywhere between 50 to 85% of his full retirement benefit, not his reduced benefit, but of his full retirement benefit.
Well,
so then he can wait till 66, till full retirement age, and at 66 he can suspend his benefit. It won't affect their benefits. They can still collect on his record. And he can start up again at 70. So he takes a hit under the strategy, which we call start, stop, start. He starts his benefit. He suspends it at 66. That means stopping it. And then restarting it at 70. Under that strategy, he ends up with lower lifetime benefits on it for himself, but higher lifetime benefits for the family. And that's the optimal strategy in their case. So and that particular case involves them taking 10 different benefits through time because ultimately, the child starts collecting on the mom's record, and then the husband dies, and he starts collecting a child survivor benefit on the dad's record, and then the mom dies, and the kid starts collecting on the mom's record. Mm-hmm. And so you have it gets complicated. That's why you need sophisticated software in certain cases.
And I know
the combination of the book and the software. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
well, I know on your website you talk about it being Social Security being enormously complex, and we can just see just a few examples here. So, do you think this book or you know, anything that experts like you are publishing is going to push the needle to have Social Security reform, or do you think it's kind of stuck in the mud and it's going to be a long time before that happens?
Well, I think Social Security is definitely broke, in my opinion. We have a big debate in the last chapter. My co-authors kind of disagree with me, but I think they're not economists, and I think they're wrong. I love them dearly, but the reality is that if you look at the trustees' report, Social Security trustees, they'll tell you in Table 6F1, if you look at the fine print, the system is 33% underfinanced compared to the Detroit pensions, which were 20% underfinanced before Detroit went bankrupt because it couldn't afford that. So Social Security needs more revenue through time to pay for all the promised benefits. It needs 33% more revenue. That's what it means to be 33% underfinanced. But there's a vast army of older people associated together through the American Association of Retired People, people called the AARP.
Right.
They're the strongest lobby group in Washington. They've got 50 million members. It's very hard, I think, for Congress to change any benefit provisions for anybody who's now retired, anybody who's close to retired, probably anybody 55 or older is not going to ever see any change in the benefit formulas. What we could possibly envision is a phase-in of a new system for younger people, and I have a proposal to do that at the purpleplans.org, thepurpleplans.org, thought through how to fix Social Security for younger people because it desperately needs to be fixed. But I think most likely no politician will propose to fix anything. You know, we've got these people that seem to care much more about the next election than they do about the next generation.
Yeah.
About who's going to pay all these bills. So we have to anticipate higher taxes, probably not benefit cuts, but probably higher taxes maybe on our benefits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just creeping, crawling tax hikes, which we already saw in Affordable Care Act legislation. We've got these hidden taxes, which many of your listeners may not be aware of, which is the new Medicare taxes.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you being there. We're going to take a short break. Do you have questions about Social Security? Get your questions to the author of Get What's Yours right now, Secrets to Maximizing Your Social Security Benefits. 888-99-CHART is how you reach us. You can join us right now on Invest Talk.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And if you have questions about our talking point today, there's a link to a related article on our website homepage or any of the past five podcasts. Or you can get a note to Steve or Justin about it, and they will respond. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin.
We're talking with Lawrence Kittlecoff about he co-authored a book called Get What's Yours, The Secrets of Making more Social Security or making or getting your maximum out of your Social Security benefits. And Lawrence, I have one couple more questions before we end the show, and that's about taxes and tax consequences. Now, when you get Social Security, is it income taxed? And what if you wanted to work? How much money can you earn working without having to pay more and more income tax? How does that work?
Well, Social Security benefits are taxed. Up to 85% of the benefits are subject to taxation. So if you have asset income or labor income, and what's called your adjusted gross income, even withdrawals from retirement accounts will raise your modified adjusted gross income. And
are we losing him? Do we lose him?
If you're going to be delaying your taking retirement benefits to 70 and you retire at 63, that's a good time to be thinking about taking out some money from your retirement account. So
Lawrence, you're breaking up on us. We're hearing about every second or third word.
I'm sorry.
There you go. That's better.
It's a little better?
Yes.
Okay, I was just saying that, if you can see up to 85% of your Social Security benefits subject to taxation. Mm-hmm. And one way to avoid that is to try and take some of your retirement account money out early, like your 401k money or your IRA money. Now, if you're in a Roth, that's not going to affect the taxation of your Social Security benefits. So Roth conversions may make sense. Another concern about working that you raised the idea of working and how that affects your Social Security benefits. Well, Social Security has something called the earnings test. So suppose you file for retirement benefits, and this earnings test applies up through the point that you reach full retirement age. So maybe you're 64, you decide to retire or work part-time, and now you're earning more than about $15,000. Well, you're going to lose $1 of benefits for every $2 that you earn. But I wouldn't be too concerned about that, because at full retirement age, Social Security has something called the adjustment of the reduction factor, and they bump up your retirement benefit to compensate you for having lost money through the earnings test. So this earnings test is really a way to con the elderly out of working, because you have this kind of make-believe tax. People aren't told about the fact that it's offset by higher benefits in the future. And so everybody thinks that if they work, they're going to be hit by this earnings test. They'll lose their Social Security benefits, which they will temporarily, but then they'll get higher benefits later. But it forces it leads a lot of people to stop working or to work just below $15,000 in terms of what they earn. So we discuss all this in the book, Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out Your Social Security Benefits. So I recommend it. I would not ask Social Security anything about your Social Security benefits. I would tell them what to do. They can't be trusted. They've been making the most basic mistakes time and again in the different offices around the country. And just the idea of taking your benefits early. Let's say you took them at 63, and now maybe you're single, never married. You want to start them at a higher level at 7. You want to suspend them. You're now full retirement age. People around the country in Social Security offices have been telling folks that they can't suspend their benefits, which is absolutely 100% wrong. I just interacted with an office in Tacoma, Washington. A lady was told 5 times on the phone the wrong thing, and then 2 times in the office the wrong thing. And then I called the head of the office and explained to him what the law was, and he fixed it. And he had a meeting with his staff. Now,
oh, man. So you're saying the government doesn't understand their own system.
They have no idea what they're doing. The last people you want to ask about Social Security is Social Security.
It's almost like the IRS. You don't ask them either. Lawrence, appreciate you being with us today. I really appreciate it, and thank you for answering those questions. We will direct people, and I have been directing people to get the book, and I will now direct them to take a look at your website, and we really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Lawrence Kittlecoff.
Anytime. Have me back.
Thank you very much. He wrote Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maximizing Your Social Security Benefits, and I think it's very, very, very informal, informational. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, along with Justin Klein, and for everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for listening today, and we hope you have a good evening, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.